one of the texts that has inspired women to try to reconstruct their place or their role as disciples around Jesus. And it is from Matthew 26. Now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he sat at table. But when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." And those last words, in memory of her, is the title of a very, very thorough study on women in the biblical context and women around Jesus. And I would like to invite you to be open to try to understand what feminist theology is on its own terms, or what its concerns or intention is, and not blocked to it on beforehand because of certain ideas about what it is, and being defensive to it, because feminist theology is in some instances one-sided and pushy and aggressive and not very constructive, etc. But I think that generally speaking, its intention is good, and its intention is a more balanced view, and a view that can entail more and can hold together the wholeness, and that it finally doesn't want to exclude anybody, but rather to go for a more integrated understanding and the wholeness of the community in Christ. And in order to reconstruct Christianity and the role of women in Christianity, feminist theology definitely uses the essence of the biblical message, but it rejects the form in which this message has been given through the times, because because the cultural form in which the message has been given has been tied in very much with a male-dominated culture, feminists would say.
What did you say about losing the essence?
That feminist theology is based on the biblical message, or what is the essence of the biblical message.
Oh, okay.
But so often the message is tied in with culture so much that it's difficult to distinguish them. And feminist theologians would allow themselves to be critical towards the form in which the message is often handed over. So you will often meet a radical reinterpretation of Christian doctrines and Christian tradition. And a few feminists have even gone so far that they say the message is simply lost in this male-dominated culture, in the form in which it is given. We can't distinguish, so we have to throw everything out and say Christianity is basically so oppressive of women that we can't use it for anything. But these feminist theologians would still talk about God, but not about God as God is presented within the Christian tradition. But that's the very, very radical feminists, and the feminist theologians that I want to talk about are the feminists that still understand themselves within the church and understand themselves as Christians, but see a need for a reconstruction, a reinterpretation. And compared to classical or academic theology, which wants to be able to put Christianity into a system and be able to give answers, feminist theology is a questioning theology. And just by asking the questions, there has already that has already led to some liberation, to some freeing, to some new understanding. And the feminist theologians believe that the questioning has to take place on the basis of our own experience. That it must be rooted in our own experience, and it must be rooted in the situation that we are part of. It must arise out of our life experience and out of our situation. And that experience from which feminist theologians ask is one of oppression, and one which is experienced as fear, as pain, and sometimes even it is the basic questions of survival, for example, for the third world women. And that means a totally different way of doing theology when you ask from the point of view of basic survival, either physical survival or spiritual health. So it's a totally different starting point than academic theology. I don't know how many of you heard Tim's presentation on liberation theology, where he talks about that difference. And so the feminist starting point is a viewpoint from below, from the underside of history, from the marginalized, and as such it is one trend of liberation theology. And where we know liberation theology as theology of the third world, or countries or races that are oppressed, feminist theology could perhaps be the liberation theology for our part of the world. And feminist theology understands liberation as multidimensional. So it's not only liberation for our way of thinking or our spirituality, but it's also liberation for our sexuality in the broad sense, and liberation of gender, and it is social political liberation, and liberation is must be multidimensional simply because oppression is multidimensional and sin is multidimensional. And for feminist theologians, oppression and sin are, or they see oppression as sin. So they advocate a holistic view, holistic in the sense of the whole person, and also in the sense of incorporating all women. So there's a definite sense of solidarity across boundaries like races and culture and different life conditions, etc. And finally, it also means wholeness in the sense that it should be freeing also of men and incorporate men, in the sense that it what it wants is to change structures that are oppressive, that are seen as oppressive, not only of women but also of men. Simply the fact that we are given certain roles to play within a structure that is oppressive.
You talked about the sense of this multiracial goes across racial lines. Is that a white perspective? I don't hear that from black women or women, other women of color, at least the ones that I've read.
You could be right there. That
I mean it's an admirable aim, but I don't know. Yeah. In terms of from colored women's perspective, if it's really a reality for them.
Mm-hmm. I think at conferences where feminist theology take place, it is very international. But I think that on the part of colored or black women, that they are in a dilemma because they feel an oppression, both from men within their own culture, but definitely also from the first world countries where we as white women are also part of that oppression of them. And I think that the black or colored women would feel more loyalty to their own culture and than they would to the white.
I don't know if this
culture
is true of sometimes there's books where you read about black theology. Would it be the same difference there for black theology versus liberation theology? Do the blacks consider black theology part of liberation theology or separate again for the same reason? It's brought to mind a question I've had in the same vein.
Mm-hmm.
Are there many women of color writing about this? I mean, I'm not familiar with many.
I haven't seen.
Yeah, it's all been white European or some women. I just said.
Oh, there are black women writing.
I'm wondering who, because I'd like to do some reading in that area, and I haven't.
I know that I've come across articles in connection with conferences, but I would have to think about it to give you any names.
That'd be helpful because I have not seen that either.
Uh-huh.
As much of their literature as I can.
Mm-hmm. There's some Asian women here.
I've seen that. Mm-hmm.
I think I can get the name as an Indonesian.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
In response to Carolyn, I don't know. I think the black theologian that I know about, which you are male, identify very strongly with liberation theology. I'm not sure that they'd say it more that the possibly black theology in this country is part of liberation theology, but I don't think they say it's the same.
Mm-hmm. But that's a good question, and it ties in with the question whether liberation must take place from below, that only the people who are oppressed can free themselves, or whether whether it also takes the oppressors to at least be willing to give way for that liberation. And but probably we as white women cannot liberate black women unless as black colored women struggle for it themselves.
I've just seen that concern raised among a lot of different spectrums of violence victims at work.
Yeah.
I haven't done as much thinking as I think you should have.
I have that question too, because I was at a feminist conference and woman brought up the aspect that whether we're talking Christian feminism or more of a cultural secular feminism, it seems like it's been middle class and upper class white women that have received the goodies from this movement, and that the gap has widened between not only segments, white and black segments in our society, but white women and black women. Black women are still, by and large, most impoverished women.
Mm-hmm.
Single female. What?
Impoverished people.
Right.
Yeah.
And that whether or not the feminist movement, in essence, has helped these people or has oppressed them more. At least economically, the facts as they are economically, is that their condition is worse now than it was 10 years ago.
How would you tie that into feminism in terms of being a causal factor?
I don't know if it's a causal factor. It's that if feminism is a political movement, why do some individuals within that movement, if it's a entirely comprehensive of females in the United States, for instance, why are some making great economic gains and others are losing ground? And whether or not, if within the feminist movement itself, there's the rich and the poor, whether the white feminists oppress.
Mm-hmm.
Whether there's really equal economic opportunity within the feminist movement.
Well, I don't think that you can say that the feminist movement has meant oppression to other groups of women, but perhaps we can say that it has failed, or its weakness is that it has only come to raising awareness about the problem, and that it hasn't yet been able to take the social and political measurements to really change the situation, but at least there's been a consciousness raising, which I think is a step in the right direction.
I don't know, not to get lost in the whole feminist movement, because I think that's a whole other discussion. The Christian feminist movement has not contributed to that, it seems to me, made any difference, because the Christian church has not made any difference. In other words, I think it's no better yet than the Christian church, and it may be part of the liberation of the Christian church, economics too, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we could score feminism for that when what it's trying to deal with is to renew the church, and that church is not economically involved, at least has refused to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't at all want to blame feminism for that. I think I see it as maybe part of the hope of bringing a consciousness of a social mandate of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Both things are very interesting to talk about. I think getting into the Christian feminist movement, if we're talking about healing, is one of the larger opportunities for us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to cut off that kind of discussion, I just think we're all over.
Yeah. So, the feminist movement is at least ideally an appreciation of the differences and the richness that is in the differences, and the appreciation of the interdependence. Well, it's a view that correlates with the vision of community in Corinthians 12, and I think it opposes a more imperialistic Christian view that we're used to, that to be Christian is to make other people become like yourself instead of rejoicing in the richness in differences. As I said, the feminist theology is based in the biblical message, and see the biblical message as freeing in itself. And see that as freeing compared to the stereotype understanding of female nature. But then the problem is that often in the Bible the two have been tied together. And that means this rejection of the cultural form of the Christian message, often, or the Christian tradition. Ties in with some of the things that Anna will be talking about, like Jesus denying the motherhood as being the ultimate source of blessedness for women, and Jesus rejecting the physiological uncleanness imposed on women. Mm. That the biblical message frees from this rigid stereotype understanding of women in terms of their nature and what roles should follow naturally from their nature. And feminist liberation doesn't mean freedom from men, but rather the freedom to move into self-love and self-respect and the right and the ability to define yourself and to determine yourself in your own situation. And I mentioned that in another context, how feminist theologians would redefine what sin means, that from a female perspective, sin is not pride, but rather self-loss and evasiveness and alienation from yourself and guilt. And the lack of courage to take over yourself and define your own situation. So you can say that sin is the wrong use of freedom. As regards men have used freedom in a wrong way by using it to strive for power and have power over others, but women have used freedom in a wrong way, in that they chose not to have freedom or chose to remain in roles that were secure.
So that would be a choice then. If you speak of they use freedom that way, it means they chose to do that rather than, I guess when we speak so often we use the term oppression in the connection, and yet this is kind of an...
Well, I think there are, there are two aspects of...
Using freedom, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. I think that there are probably two aspects of oppression, that there is a fact that something or somebody outside yourself try to oppress you, but there's also the aspect of your letting yourself be oppressed out of fear or out of security or that's the same that certain roles or ways of behavior have been depicted as Christian values and values that especially women were supposed to take on. But also, on the other hand, women have actually bought into that and have taken on those roles. And a main concern for feminist theology is to erase the awareness that it need not be that way, and that we are empowered to live these roles.
Excuse me, you know, in connection with that, with the feminist theologian feel that it's wrong to take on those roles, or in biblically speaking, that was not directed to women, that was directed to followers of Christ. These kind of characteristics, humility, or would the feminists say that those characteristics should be taken on by all people, not just women? Or would they say the characteristics are wrong to take on?
I think they would say that that these characteristics should be taken on by everybody, and they would fight against the misuse that arises when some use it
apply it to
others.
Wouldn't you add too that it is the correction of an understanding of this humility, I think, is grossly abused by Christians, as if it means no worth in the person.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what Christian humility is about. Mm-hmm. It is to affirm your worth and be able to brag about your worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that word brag. The same with the servant, you know, is my usual theme. I think servanthood in biblical understanding is the same as what contemporary people mean by friendship. And those are really quite two different concepts in the contemporary world.
Mm-hmm.
Servanthood really means doing any, for a lot of people, just being trampled on by anybody else, doing anything at all that nobody else wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that often is an insult to the person for whom you're doing it. A friend senses that when I do something for you that you really ought to do for yourself, I'm really loving you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I won't do for you what you ought to do for yourself. So I think it includes a re-examination of Christian virtues, as well as making it inclusive and not using
Them.
Can I ask Elmer a question with mine?
Yeah, no.
What would be a good word for humility today in art?
Good question.
You mean that would be closer and keeping with the original?
Right. So we could substitute that word.
I get closer to the word integrity, you know, I mean that it's, that you, what you do is it really fits for what you are. There are some jobs that probably are really not really integrated into your life.
Sure.
To pretend, you know, I think is meaning. There's probably other good ones too. It's a good question.
Perhaps compassion, I don't know, or solidarity. At least feminist theologians have interpreted obedience more in terms of solidarity, whereas traditional obedience would be not questioning. They would say it's more to be understood as solidarity, which can sometimes entail struggling or going against structures.
Um,
feminist theologians see women's oppression rooted in the dualistic way of thinking, which we have been talking a lot about, a dualistic thinking that goes back to when the church was, or Christianity was incorporated into the Greco-Roman culture and became so tied in with a male-dominated culture, and that again was reinforced with the Cartesian worldview, if you remember that, where that split between mind and body. And this dualistic thought is a mindset of patriarchalism, or a hierarchical way of structuring relationships in society, so that there is this split between mind and body and spirit and carnality and men and women and superior and inferior and subject and object. And therefore spirituality is such an important issue for feminist theology. If you see the books that are written on spirituality, most of them, or many of them, are by women, because women see a need for a new spirituality which can take over from the male religious projection into some transcendent God. And I think that women's spirituality has a lot to do with that new paradigm which we talked about, and the concern for wholeness. But it's not only the dualistic mindset, but also a patriarchy as a socio-economic and political system that must be fought. And so we understand that it's basically structures that must be fought and must be changed in order to liberate not only women but also men, who are also held captive and also held captive in certain roles in that structure. So it's fighting structures more than it is women fighting men over. So it's a social and political reality more than it is the question of different mindsets.
What do small question? What do Christian feminists do with Paul? I should know about this. What do they do with that?
They would take the freedom to say that this is the essence of Paul's message, such as in Christ there's no difference between man and woman, between slave and free, and things like that. And then they would take the freedom to say that this message was spoken in a certain cultural setting, in a certain context. And for example, the quotation which is probably used the most to put down women and the equality of women within the church is Paul's saying that women should be quiet in assemblies. And if you understand that in the context, the fact in the first place that women were allowed as members of the early Christian communities was in itself very radical compared to the contemporary culture. And women were not used to being equal members and were lacking in knowledge compared to the men. So the women would be asking too many questions, which would be disturbing for the community as a whole. And therefore Paul tells that says to the women that they have to be quiet because they are disturbing the congregations by asking too many questions, and that they will have to ask outside the gatherings, catch up that way. But in the first place, the fact that women were members is in itself radical. They women were not equal members or seen as people that should have that position in the contemporary culture. So in that way, Christianity was new, also incorporating slaves, for example, as equal members and children. And it has really been a concern for feminist theology to try to reconstruct what actually happened around Jesus and in the early Christian communities, and the early Christian communities caused social unrest exactly because it allowed women and slaves into the communities, and Christianity actually was a religion of slaves and was a danger to the society of its time because it had that message of liberation for groups that were normally suppressed and marginalized, and the early Christian communities were shaped around house churches that were set up as fellowships of equals, and therefore Christianity was seen as a danger by the surrounding society, and therefore Christianity almost had to subdue its radical message, and therefore you see that in the later epistles you see that tension coming in, where the radical message of freedom is being accommodated to the culture. And there are some contradictions there that the patriarchy of the surrounding society has an impact on Christian ethics and the Christian community, and that Christianity starts to accommodate, and that means that the message of freedom for women and slaves, etc., and that social political power for change is being leveled out. Yeah.
The dualism we were talking about earlier, did that actually influence the writings themselves, or just the interpretations of them more primarily?
I think in the epistles you can detect that contradiction already. Like there are these household codes that are definite cultural household codes, but are incorporated into the Bible as a kind of Christian morality, which is definitely puts women in their place.
Do you think women, or feminist theologians, of looking at feminist theology as being a more inclusive way of looking at spirituality in the Gospels, or a base for changing the church as a social system for more economic justice?
Yeah, I think so.
You think that it's both, or?
I think it is. It could, that it challenges the church to rethink or to perhaps even a collective conversion within the church in terms of a new spirituality, and also in terms of a discipleship that would be more political or more for change, which would mean political engagement.
I'm interested in getting your European perspective. In the United States, I guess it's my opinion that the church, institutional church, is behind other segments of our society, professions of law and medicine and other academic disciplines in being inclusive of women within the church hierarchy. And do you find that in Denmark?
Would you paraphrase that again?
The church, as far as having women in roles of leadership or decision-making capacity in our country, it's my personal opinion that the church is behind the rest of society as far as allowing women to be in positions that make decisions.
They're behind, you mean it's slower than?
They're slower than. Less.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I thought you meant perhaps supporting. Yeah.
No. They're slower than other segments of our society.
Well,
is that the same as Europe? Why would you think that happened?
I don't think that the official church in Denmark is in any way against women in different positions, but I think that there's that way of thinking is so ingrained in traditional Christianity, and therefore you'd also meet it in a lot of congregations that would be resistant because they've simply not yet grown used to the idea of women in these positions.
So you would see a great deal of difference between the European churches and in the U.S.?
Perhaps in the sense that the church in Denmark has allowed more women, or we have more women pastors in Denmark.
For much longer.
Yeah, but I think that it's a long process to make people change their minds.
Do the Danish people feel more comfortable having a female physician than a female pastor? So no difference as far as that.
I don't know.
How would you answer that for the U.S.?
I don't know. I would say that at least I grew up in a real conservative area and still live in one. And women can't get a call in ALC congregations.
Mm-hmm. A lot of men can't either right now.
Well, but the men, there's an oversupply, but women have a hard time getting calls.
And being raised in Missouri Synod too, that first time I seen a woman in pulpit was up here, and I never really thought about it.
They just took it out. Publication just in the last 2 weeks, we had a very strong statement by the Missouri Synod saying they're right in their opposition to women in any leadership roles, including reading and services.
Mm-hmm. Well, then how about this merger?
They're not in it.
They're not in the preserve. Oh, excuse me.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. What basis do they use for that?
Well, mostly distortion of the wall. It falls bad enough by itself.
Right.
They go further.
Even in reading.
Oh yeah, this time you can read because it could be misunderstood. You know, if you stand out and read in church, you might think that it's certainly not in, you know, helping distribute communion or one of the other stuff. Or we had a, remember the write-in, was it a year ago? When what's her name's father's congregation wouldn't allow young women as acolytes. Because again, you're getting up there in the chancel. And people here wrote almost insulting letters
to that
church conference. So, come on now, get with it. You know, you've got to give the women a chance. So you know, that was an ALC congregation.
Yeah, but now that Missouri, it wouldn't matter whether it was me as a female or you as a male. You're not going to be invited to even commune with them. So it's very not understandable, but it's. It only fits with the Missouri movement.
So they use theology. They use theology as a basis of that.
Yeah, I think I would say that the reluctance to seeing women in positions that women usually have not been in is very much determined by our culture. But that within the church, people give religious reasons for why women shouldn't be there, and they think that they see it as part of their understanding of Christianity that it should be that way. But I think that it's actually determined culturally.
I think we'll say quickly, you know, well, it's always been that, you know, the story, history of the church. So they say,
no women at the Last Supper.
Right. You can't have a woman priest because she wasn't at the Last Supper. But they fail to recognize that was determined culturally. It's today's culture that's still doing it, but originally it was a cultural thing. That's what they refuse to accept. Mm-hmm. That's why Missouri Synod does not accept higher critical approach to the scriptures, because then you'd have to deal with the cultural effects of the teachings of that time, of the house codes that I was talking about. Well, they won't accept that. The word is there, the way it is.
What happens to the golden rule and all this stuff? I mean, how can people, to me, that's probably the most important thing in the gospel is the golden rule, right now where I'm coming from. That is so cool how people, when I was growing up, you know, it was always my grandma, remember my first real difference with my grandma was about black people, you know. And so, isn't that Christian? Aren't they included? You know, aren't these people included? It's like, I don't know what the response was, like, don't tell me that stuff, or, you know, or, don't want to hear that crap.
You love everybody in general, you know, that's, you know, what you do. Sure, I love blacks and I love women and all that stuff, but never in the particular. And that's, their answer would be, well, the Bible says that.
But I think it's also what Nina was pointing out, that it's on the local level, the congregations, when we're speaking of like ALC, officially, women are ordained in the ministry, but if they aren't receiving calls, it's because the congregation isn't calling.
Right.
Because, so it's back to what you said, that it's the people themselves.
Unfortunately, many of the women in the local congregation.
More women
opposing it. Again, not blaming women because they're women, but what the society has done.
Where do you think that comes from?
Well, don't you think that women who have not taken the freedom to redefine the roles would feel defensive when they see other women taking on that freedom and actually doing it? That is feeling critiqued in your
role. I have only had the experience of knowing several congregations, because I haven't been in the States, that had female pastors. In three cases that I have known them, one was a Methodist and two were Lutheran. But one of the big, what they said was a stumbling block for them, was that, at least it came across to them, that the female pastors, I mean, this is the way they would say it, they used the pulpit to try to, in other words, the pulpit was their form mm-hmm. for talking feminism mm-hmm. rather than for mm-hmm. Chilean gospel. And I guess personally, I feel that has been somewhat true, and I think it's almost inevitable mm-hmm. that in the beginning you're going to find that much more by nature of the personalities mm-hmm. that would be strong enough and courageous enough to make those first breaks mm-hmm. against tradition, and they tend to be the people that will do that. But on a congregational level, then that turns them off rather mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. makes them feel supported.
I know that there are critical voices within the Christian feminist movement itself that points to the danger of perhaps confusing what is it that we want with what is God's will,
yeah.
and that
is true for all of us.
Yeah.
I find not only in the church, but in the arena I work in politics, that the biggest drawbacks to female candidates and female issues like ERA are women themselves. The last Democratic nomination for president made a strategical error in thinking women were organized and could deliver votes. And women are the most fragmented political unit in the United States. One of the things that when Elmer talks about the cultural way that women are put in that role, I had an interesting discussion with a woman who said that it's a cultural but also a physical role, in that the biological capabilities of a woman as far as childbearing and primary childbearing
put
a woman at a disadvantage within the economic system as we know it. Right. What did you say? Did you mention something about that?
I'm not sure I got you.
Oh, I said that it's a cultural system, but the culture is based on that the procreator of society are women, and because of that, they are the economic and social disadvantage because of biology.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain
yeah.
point.
And we can ask whether it need be that way, or we could perhaps change our structures so that there was paid more consideration to that fact. And feminists have tried to see their biological capacity for procreation, etc., more as a resource to rejoice in than fate, and that you need not see it as fate and as the only way of fulfilling yourself as a woman. So. But still, I think we should also hold on to the right of the women who prefer to see their fulfillment in life in, you know, giving priority to family and children and so on. But that we say that women should have a choice more than they have had, and that we could change our structures for work, etc., so that it should be possible for a woman to have children and family and work at the same time.
Does the feminist movement allow, has that enhanced the effort of childbearing and raising for women? Has it do you think that feminists view a woman staying at home and raising a family as a valid expression of being female?
You're just talking of feminism in general, I guess.
No, the feminist movement.
But in general, not Christian.
A Christian feminist.
I think that they would say yes, that is one form, but not the only form of fulfilling yourself as a woman. But I don't think that we should just reverse it and say that way earlier was the way of fulfillment, it is now rejected totally as a way of fulfillment, and now we have to go for other ways of fulfilling ourselves, like in the work area and so on. That would be restricting ourselves in another way. I don't know whether I should, I mean, I have more, but whether we should let Anna continue, or I should finish this session and then let it. How do we have two people on for the next session? So perhaps I can finish this session?
Yeah.
I would take a whole session.
No. I'd rather hear Anna's, at the beginning of a session and respond to
that
too. Mm-hmm.
So just to conclude on this, feminist theologians would say that the original message of love and mutuality and service and solidarity was replaced at an early stage by morality and obedience. And I hope it's clear that they see that as a consequence of Christianity being incorporated into a cultural way of thinking, which was male-dominated. And that meant that Christianity lost the power as a social and political alternative. And that tension between the interpretation of what Christianity is means that you can find such different groups of women within the church, as on one hand the moral majority and on the other hand a radical feminist movement. And that means to many feminists a problem of remaining within the church. But I think that we must remain within the church as a critical power within it, which can hopefully change the church from within, and that we also acknowledge our being part of this whole structure and take our responsibility for it and work to change it, rather than to step out and say that it's be so self-righteous as to step out. So it means that feminist theology should be a critical theology of liberation, but it should also have a vision of liberation. It should be both critical and constructive. And the frustration is perhaps that till now it has been more critical than it has been constructive. And in order to be critical and be visionary, we have to seek our heritage, as these women have tried to do in the reconstruction of Christianity, and we have to be able to define our own presence and to envision our future. And that has, as far as I see it, a lot to do with creating a sense of identity and a positive identity. And Sulla talks about how this, how it is a process moving from apathy and numbness into consciousness raising about the situation, which can then, instead of the apathy, lead to an anger, which can actually be a resource in changing the situation. And then from consciousness raising and getting in touch with that anger, we can articulate and name the problem and name the change and finally take action. I could talk more about the basis for doing feminist theology, but I think I could also take that up in connection with liberation theology tomorrow, because the sources is very much the same. So I think I'll stop here. You had a question yesterday, John, about I think it was about how the feminist movement has changed from when it first came up and then how it is today.
Yes.
And I think there has been a positive change in the way that the feminist movement, that is at least how I experienced it, was at first very aggressive, very angry, very pushy, and it seemed almost to be just the reversal of power structures.